Good evening, it's Wednesday night, the time is 7:05 and you're listening to Murder Chat. Harold, Kathy and Ebi in the studio, and on the line we have Dr. Liz DeRome and Dr. Chris Hurren from Deakin University. How are you, peoples?
Good afternoon, very well, thank you.
Yeah, and
Liz... Good evening all, good at this end too.
Yep, and what, one's in Sydney and the other one is in Melbourne, is that, oh, in Geelong, let's put you in the right area.
That's correct,
yeah. No, excellent.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're going to be talking specifically about motorcycle gear testing again tonight. It's been on the go for quite some time. But before we do that, we must say a big thank you to Michael for the Michael at Six show before. Interesting music that was there.
And it's been a while since we've had Liz and Chris on the show.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And I think this is actually the first time we've had you both on together. And if we can just explain to exactly what your role is within the MotorCap process, please.
Ladies first.
Yeah, I'll probably start with that. so I think Liz was going to go as well, but So we're the official test laboratory for MotoCap. We've got all of the testing equipment, and we essentially are a contractor to MotoCap to provide the acquisition and testing of all of the garments that appear on the MotoCap website.
Okay. Before you go too much further, Chris, what is MotoCap?
So MotoCap is a motorcycle clothing assessment program. Mm-hmm. What we do is we go out and we buy motorcycle clothing in store in Australia and New Zealand. We bring it back into the laboratory. We get a second garment online. We test them for all of the things that are important in protection and comfort when we're riding a motorbike. And then we put all the results free online for anyone in the world to look at.
Mm. That's one of the things that I really appreciate is that about every 2 to 3 weeks we get another email from you saying that there's another lot of things up online. So how often do you test put out another lot of things that you've tested?
So we try to have a release at least once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we might have two in the month. Sometimes we might not have one at all. It just depends on the flow rate through the laboratory at the time.
Right. And, Liz, we've missed out on what your role is within MotoCap, please.
Well, I'm an injury epidemiologist, which means I do research into crashes and injuries that people sustain in crashes, and then I use that to look at what we need to do to prevent the injuries. I also look at how to prevent the crashes as well. But so it was my original work that enabled us to start the whole thing, actually. But now what I do is I'm continuing to do research, like the moment I'll talk about later, but a large 5-year population study into motorcycle crash injuries. And so we know how often riders get particular types of injuries, like how often, what proportion of people get head injuries, what proportion of people get injuries to different parts of their body. So we can go back and look at the clothing that we're testing. Is it good enough? Does it have the right protection in the right places?
So that's all for developing the injury risk zones.
Well, we didn't develop them. That was work done back in the 1990s, a long time ago, by a British academic from Cambridge University, who was also a motorcyclist. And he developed the four impact risk zones, but that tells us which parts of your body are most likely to hit the road and which parts are going to slide on the road.
Mm. Do they change at all? Do they change at all since then?
No, but I mean, we were the first people to actually validate them against current crashes. So we looked at what we've been doing is looking at where riders today sustain injury impacts, and we completely validated what Professor Roderick Woods did all those years ago. He was right.
He was.
People still have same relative prevalence of impacts of the same parts of their body.
So, in other words,
the protective clothing's better now.
Right.
But the way you get hit is the same.
Right. So when the skeptic comes up to me and says, oh, those injury zones, I got hurt somewhere else, it comes down to a statistical analysis has been done. It's very thorough. Obviously, you've got the science behind it to support exactly what you're saying within the Good Gear Guide and various other publications that are out there. Would that be fair?
Yeah,
sorry,
I was going to say, if you look at it, it's a statistical evaluation, so you're looking at where the majority of the strikes occur.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that a strike can't occur in a funny place,
yeah,
because the person was glancing, they were riding an old classic motorbike and they were glancing down at the front wheel when the crash occurred, and so it's not a standard crash.
Mm.
But if we look at all of our standard crashes, then you're likely to have injuries in certain locations.
And what we've been doing is doing population studies, like every, you know, trying to recruit every rider, like the study we did in Canberra in the ACT, we tried to recruit every rider who fell off over a 12-month period, whether they were injured or not. So the people who went to hospital, they're fairly easy to recruit, but we also involved all the crash repair services and the rider community to try to get everybody who, you know, whether or not they're injured, so we could see, well, maybe the ones who weren't injured were wearing better clothes, were better or different clothing. So you try to do population studies.
Yeah, and that's important too, because that gives you a far more accurate cross-section of incidents that are occurring on the road.
That's absolutely, you're absolutely right there. Mm. A lot of the road authority crash data is based on people who go to hospital.
Mm.
And we all know that, you know, a lot of people go to hospital, not a lot, but people go to hospital, but a lot more who fall off don't go to hospital.
Yeah.
They still might be injured.
Yeah.
But not everybody goes to hospital.
That's right. And
not
some,
everybody's admitted to hospital.
Yeah. And some
so
of them,
they use a much smaller and more severely injured population to gain their impressions from.
Yeah, that's right. Well, some people really don't have much of an injury. They may just have a scrape on their helmet or their gear, maybe a cut on their finger or whatever. So, and it's not really relevant that they go to hospital or even their doctor, but to get that data is very relevant.
That's right.
Mm. So, go on, Chris, go on.
What I was going to say, a lot of what Liz does, and a little bit where I help her, is to help us to understand that what we're doing with MotoCap is correct.
Mm.
Without the understanding of what's happening when people crash their motorcycles and how clothing is performing, we can't be certain that we're doing things right. So we do those extra experiments, those extra studies, the extra research to make sure that we're going in the right direction. And so Liz is talking about a study that she's just finished doing on over a 5-year period on gear. We've done another one together on gloves just recently that we're in the process of writing the scientific publications for. And then I've got one that we're doing at the moment that's looking at the, and I think I mentioned it the last time I was on, that's looking at the how the actual road surfaces perform versus our testing machine.
Yeah. Which actually ties me exactly into a beautiful question that I was thinking about on the way down here. The speed that you've got your testing machines going at and the weight you've got on it, what was the scientific basis behind choosing that speed and that weight?
So Roderick, who developed the injury areas, also developed the abrasion tester that we used. And I've been fortunate, I've been able to visit Roderick and spend a couple of days with him using the original tester and to have a talk with him. The 5-kilogram weight is designed to simulate the weight of an elbow or a shoulder, knee or a hip. The area of that surface is designed to also simulate the amount of area that comes into contact with the ground when we hit with one of those pointy surfaces. And then the belt and the speed was based on 200 items of clothing that he had that had come from riders that had crashed their motorcycle, and so he was trying to duplicate the damage the same as that gear. But also he had a mannequin that he set up called Metal Mickey that had hockey balls for elbows, for shoulders and things like that, that was was mass and size correct to a person, and he would drive along in a Ford Transit van and throw it out the side to simulate crashes to understand the damage that occurred to the clothing so that he could then confirm that that's what he was seeing on the abrasion test.
Oh, you didn't use felons or anything like that, did he?
we've got a little bit more scientific than that. What we've done is we've replicated the abrasion tester we have in the laboratory with one that goes into the tow bar of a car. So we're actually able to conduct exactly the same as a laboratory test, but on any road surface at any speed that we want to go at.
Right, so you've got different road surface tests too, different style of road surface.
Yeah, so we don't use that for MotoCap, but we use that for the science to understand do we have MotoCap right. And so we're in the process of doing some extensive testing on asphalt and spray seal or chip seal, whichever way you want to call it. So asphalt's predominantly in a city or on a major highway, and chip seal or spray seal are what you find on your average country road. And we're seeing really, really good understandings from both of those.
Is there a difference between the Hume Highway where they've got the concrete roads as opposed to the asphalt or bitumen?
So we haven't done any of this work on concrete at the moment. It's something we'd want to look at in the future. But we definitely see a massive difference between asphalt and chip seal.
Yeah, because I've noticed they're starting to use concrete in some of the new roads around Adelaide, which is a surprising. And I thought maybe that was something that we need to look at.
So if you look, asphalt and concrete are very similar to each other. Mm. Their textures are what they call a negative texture. Because you screed off the surface using a trowel, or in the case of asphalt, a big large plate that you smooth the surface like spreading butter on a piece of bread, the surface is a negative texture. So any of the texture that gives you grip is negative. You've got a flat surface with holes in it, essentially.
Yeah.
Where if you go out onto the open road, you've got a positive surface. So you put the bitumen down and then you spread the rocks on top. So it's more like a sandpaper when you go out into that application, because you've got lumps sitting on a flat surface.
That's making my eyes water just thinking about sliding across that. Yeah. And Chris, on that note, Chris and Liz, we've just got to go to a few words from our sponsors and we'll be back. We'll definitely talk a lot more about MotoCap 19, and we've got Dr. Liz Derone and Dr. Chris Hurren on the line talking about clothing, motorcycle clothing testing. So, Harold, you've got a question that you urgently want to ask.
Yeah, Liz, this one's for you. People come off their bikes, they're quite likely to get an injury. And my interest is injuries that people sustain through items that they might have in their pockets, like keys and phones. And also I see a lot of riders out there wearing backpacks. And I worry sometimes that if they're in a crash, then if something's in the backpack that might break into shards, for example, then that might cause them some damage. Is there anything that you know about that this is actually a problem?
Only from crashes that I've investigated, my sorts of information doesn't usually turn up in the road authority crash report, so because they don't report on causes of injury. But certainly I have seen people who had a jar of ointment, like a sunscreen type ointment, that sort of thing, that was completely pressed into his back. And it did a lot of tissue damage. It wasn't a serious injury in terms of threat to life. And I believe it would have left, in the long term, he would have had a scar there. But it was very painful. I've also seen keys that have penetrated the tissue, because they've, caught them, and particularly when you think, if you wear your keys in your jeans pockets, that's a really unwise place to have them if you are going to be involved in a heavy impact to that area, because it weaponizes them.
Yeah.
With backpacks, I haven't seen any examples where anybody's been injured as a result of what they were, you know, what they were carrying, but certainly the weight can be an issue in terms of overbalancing.
Yeah.
So, you know, causing an issue that in that way.
One of the things that I've seen is people wearing the shoulder bags, so the tote bags over one shoulder and across the head. Is there a negative towards that habit?
Not that I know of from my experience, but certainly you really don't. I would prefer people have like tank bags or keep any additional stuff away from your body. So there's just you. I mean, a backpack could act as a back protector, but you just have to be lucky if it was going to do that.
Depends on what's in the backpack, too.
Yeah, I would think that a backpack, if you came off...
I wouldn't wear a backpack when I was riding.
Yeah. It could also have a negative effect on the dynamics of the crash, in that if you're sliding and the backpack catches, it could cause you to roll and therefore sustain other kinds of injuries.
Yes. Absolutely. All of those things are quite true. So I do think the rider is better off unencumbered in case there is an accident. I mean, accidents are relatively rare events, but when they do happen, you want to be in the best situation possible to reduce any, you know, the risk of injury.
Mm.
Well, I suppose it comes down to the fact that we're actually spending a lot of money getting decent gear to wear, and then why would you want to compromise that by then putting dangerous stuff in around yourself?
Mm.
Yes.
I saw one rider wearing a hiking backpack, a full-size hiking backpack.
Yes.
And I thought if he comes off... then that's going to cause him all kinds of problems, as well as the overbalancing.
I think that's that's the Uber delivery people these days. They've got the pizza packs on the back, and you know, they're anything up to about 12 inches to 18 inches deep.
Mm. And, you know, and it's quite heavy too.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I do think that certainly under the national road, national road safety strategy, we're certainly hoping that the road authorities will do something about protecting those workers in the gig economy, the food delivery people, to the entire, you know, protection of them in terms of what they wear, and what they have to carry, and the conditions in which they work, actually, but still.
Oh, that's another news story, isn't it?
Actually, now, can I just expand?
But it will be dealt with I believe it's going to be dealt with, or at least mentioned, in the next road safety strategy.
Right.
I think we all need to be alert to ensuring that those people need to have the support and protection.
They certainly do.
They deserve. They're not getting it at the moment.
Yeah. Now, that actually sort of leads in quite nicely again to a question which is always sitting in the background, is do you think that we should advocate for a minimum standard of simple protective clothing, so gloves, at least long sleeved shirts and long trousers and boots? Do you see that sort of being an advantage, or would you rather say no, that let's leave that voluntary for the simple reason that we've got the issue with massive climate variations throughout the day, throughout the year, and where we ride?
Yes, look, I often get asked this question. I completely support mandatory usage of approved helmets, okay?
Yep.
I don't support mandatory usage of protective clothing. And basically, there's a number of reasons there. One is we have no means of enforcing the usage of appropriate clothing. So when you say long-sleeved garments, well, some materials will melt into the skin of the rider. It'll be long-sleeved, but it's the wrong sort of material. So we're not in a position... If with helmets, you can make a standard for the helmets. A standard for clothing is more problematic. We'll get Chris to talk on this after me, but it's more problematic because the clothing, the quality of the clothing and the protective benefits of individual garments is much harder to control and predict. And particularly for the police, they couldn't enforce it. They wouldn't know what a rider was wearing, whether it was, you know, appropriate or not. So my view has always been that we should give the riders, enable the riders to make well-informed
choices
about what they wear. That is why, you know, we've been working towards getting a star rating scheme for motorcycle clothing since 2003. So it's a long time.
It is. Yeah.
And the whole point was that we didn't want a standard because as soon as you set a standard, it's a pass-fail thing. And so, you know, under the old standard, you could get a garment that, say, lasted 3.9 seconds on the abrasion machine, and that would not pass the standard. But one that was 4.1 seconds did pass the standard. So it was just, you know, a pass-fail system is not useful in the area of clothing. But I'll hand over to Chris now to let him have his side of it.
I was going to say, I think that if we have education, that would most probably be a far better tool to be giving to people.
Australia has a really high rate of use. We have very high rates of helmets, and that's mandatory. We have very high rates of protective clothing. It does vary around the different states, and it varies up and down the latitudes. So, like Northern Territory and northern parts of the country, the usage of clothing is far less. But overall, Australian riders are well informed because of the actions of the various motorcycle community organisations, the Australian Motorcycle Council, and all the state bodies. Have continued to promote the use of effective protective clothing. And I think that really is the way we have been going quite successfully. And MotoCap enables people to make informed choices when they buy. And price is not an indicator of quality.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, can demonstrate that now with the tests that we do. So that is my preferred way. I mean, even in Victoria, I think they've going to mandate gloves and shoes, but again, people in America, in states where helmet usage is mandatory, the few states where it is, people wear fake helmets. They look like a helmet and they're not, which you're more likely to kill or severely injure you than a real helmet that's not fastened.
Wow.
So yeah. And we've had some of the fake helmets imported into Australia, but not recently, but just over the time I've been working here.
Chris, you got something to add to that?
Yeah, so if you look at it, making mandatory protective gear is not something that's very simple. Spain, I believe, is just in the process of introducing mandatory gloves. France already has introduced mandatory gloves when riding a motorcycle, but what constitutes a motorcycle glove? How does a police it? Do they pull over anyone that they suspect to not be wearing the appropriate glove and check them? Glove's not so bad. But if you go to gear, essentially the police are going to have to pull every single rider over to check to see whether they're wearing motorcycle protective gear. The only workaround I've got for it would be no exposed skin, because that's an easy one for police to police. And then it still falls back on the rider to actually wear protective gear, because you could have the person that's going to wear their ordinary shoes and their tracksuit pants and their polar fleecy top and a pair of gardening gloves.
Yes, we've seen that.
But with no exposed skin, you're still better than if you have exposed skin. Because although, and it's what I say to people with regards to gear, you're better to be in one-star gear than no gear at all. Because every piece of clothing that you put on will give you some form of protection when you slide down the road. If it's a bicycle shirt, well, yes, it's going to pop open as you hit the ground. But if it's a couple of pair of denim jeans or something else on it, you will get a little bit of protection. You're better to have more protection, but any protection is better than riding in a T-shirt and shorts.
Mm.
Yeah.
The first layer that goes will be the clothing, not your skin.
Motor chat. And we're talking specifically about moto cap. It's very difficult to get my mouth around both of those at the moment. And we've got Liz DeRome and Chris Hurren on the line as well, who basically run the moto cap for us and have found some incredible gear that's out there, very well priced. So check it out. Check out the web page.
Which is Chris?
It's motocap, motocap.com.au.
Thank you.
Yep. And,
what's new on motocap?
So we actually had a posting of new garments go up online yesterday, I think,
yes.
From memory.
Yes, it was.
I think that brings us to well over 300 garments, jackets, pants and gloves that we've tested so far that are... All the results are posted on MotoCap, ready for people to have a look at.
Yep. And I honestly can't understand any sense at all in going out to buying motorcycle gear and without first having a look at the web page just to see how they do rate. You found some quite significant differences between even brands and or the same brands but just different style of clothing. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. And as Liz said earlier, price is no indication of protection. So brand is no indication of protection, although some brands will perform better than others. So it's really, really important to come online, have a look at least three items that you think you like, then go into a store, put them on, make sure they feel comfortable and select the one that's right for you. People get all obsessed about stars. Oh, I've got to have 5 stars. There's not much 5-star there. What we're looking at is if you're going out on the open road, riding out in the countryside, then you want to be in 3-star or better. If you're riding around the city, then you want to be in 2-star or better. And that's generally the rule of thumb that we push to people when they're going out to buy gear. So don't think you have to be in 5 stars. You're better to be in a 3-star jacket that you will wear every time you hop on the bike than having a 5-star jacket that sits in the glove cupboard that you rarely wear.
And I would kind of add to that there's a publication that came out some years ago, and it's called The Good Gear Guide. And for a rider to have a look at that, it tells them what they should be looking for in good gear, and about the stitching, and if they want protection from heat or if they want protection from cold or wet, and the kinds of things that they should be considering when they're buying some gear, because not all gear is suitable for all conditions. And even though it was written quite a few years ago, and Liz DeRome wrote this up, and If you're a rider out there and you haven't read the Good Gear Guide, then it's time that you actually did, and you can get one from the MRA. Just let us know that you want one, and we'll send one out to you.
We've got boxes of
them. I was going to have a bit of a chuckle at that because Liz was actually the person who wrote
That's right. That's why I've got them.
Yeah. No,
I was just quietly basking in the sunshine.
Well done, Liz, done. Actually, I have to admit, it is such a well-written book and it's concise. It's got every bit of information. It's not overly wordy, but it's just well-prepared. So thank you, Liz, for that.
It's stood the test of time.
Mm. Mm. God, that's how many years old now?
We published that in 2009.
Yeah, so that's 12 years old now.
Very relevant.
And it's very relevant, so thank you for that.
But the basics don't change.
No.
You know, there's more gear that complies with what, you know, we said at that time available now. And the motocap testing shows you which ones are done well and which ones aren't.
Mm.
So, you know, it was the first step in the process of setting up MotorCap.
Yeah.
And it's the same intention, is to enable riders to make well-informed decisions about what they wear.
Yeah. I was going to ask a question, Chris.
So just before you do, just to add to that, my son just started riding, and we sat down and we had a look at MotoCap, and we worked out which gear he was going to wear, and then we went in and did exactly what I said. He tried on the garments until we got the ones that fitted him best, and that's the way we made our decision for what he's going to wear on the bike.
Actually, Chris, could you just repeat the story that you told at the AMC conference about buying some gear and the salesman actually directing you to another item?
No, it happens all the time. Quite often I will go in to buy a piece of gear, and it happened with my son. We went in to buy a specific pair of pants, and the salesman said, look, these ones are just as good. And I said, well, no, they're actually not. And he said, no, they're just as good. I said, well, look, on MotoCap, those ones there get 4 stars, and those ones there get 2 stars. And he said, oh yeah, but, and I said, well, I've tested them. I said, that one's got a 3.5 second liner in it, and that one's got a 7 second liner in it, and they've both got the same protection coverage. So we'll be going with a 7 second liner rather than 3.5 second liner.
Well done.
That's a fair cop.
I reckon that is.
And so that happened about a week and a half ago. It happens to me quite regularly.
Mm.
So it's the rider is able to use MotoCap to get the right level understanding of what they're buying. And the pair of pants he was showing me weren't bad. I would wear them on a motorbike. There is better that I would prefer to be wearing.
Mm.
But you can also look at an example is that there's one of the major denim manufacturers that makes reasonably good gear but doesn't always put armour in it. So you can look at the results they get, and then you can say to yourself, well, if I put armour into that garment or impact protection into the knees and hips of that garment, I'm going to raise it from a 1 star or 2 star that it gets because it doesn't have that in there up to a 3 or a 4 star. So you can make your own decision in what you're going to wear.
We do encourage the manufacturers who don't put armour in, we encourage them to include at least a pocket for aftermarket armour.
Mm.
So that if the pocket's there, then that's actually good, because the riders can go and buy good quality and the right size armour for them and put it in. And so that's, so we just try and encourage, if they don't want to put in, the American manufacturers are not very keen on impact protectors, but some of their gear is very good, and if they've got pockets, then you can add your own.
Yeah, and that's the internal pockets. We're not talking about pockets that you put your
phones internal
and stuff.
Pockets.
So they're internal pockets
to hold the impact protector.
That's correct.
They have to be in the exact right spot.
Yeah.
So it's hard for you to put them in yourself.
And another example of that is we've been looking at the statistics of the gear we've been testing to see if it's been changing over the years and things like that. One of the things we've noticed is the ladies' clothing is not getting as high protection scores as what men's clothing is. When we drill down into it, they're making the seams and the abrasion resistance the same, but the armour's not as good a quality. And this could be because women's clothing can sit on the shelves a little bit longer than what men's clothing does, which means that the armour in it is older than what the men's clothing is, and armour has developed massively. But it's really simple. If you're a lady and you're buying new gear, then you're probably better to put some higher quality aftermarket armour in it, because then your garment will be as good as what the men's equivalent is.
Mm. Do you have armour?
Can I add something? Can I add something in there on the subject of women's clothing? Quite often we find that a rider will be a guy who often pillions his girlfriend or his wife, and if they're not regular riders themselves, it's quite common to find that they're wearing their partner's older gear.
Mm.
And that is really, only do that in an emergency. Because if it doesn't actually fit the shoulders, which the difference between men's shoulders and women's shoulders is considerable, If it doesn't fit the shoulders, then the impact protector's not going to be in the right places if they do have a crash.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's much preferable to have your own gear that fits you snugly around the shoulders and the hips and everywhere. So women's gear should be women's gear.
Just a quick question about the pockets for armour. The pockets that I've seen in most garments are just attached to the garment at the top of the pocket where the armour slides in. And I've found that often that means that the armour itself slides around. So would it be better for the pocket to actually be sewn all the way around to the garment so that the armour stays in one spot?
Absolutely. But, Chris, have you seen that?
Oh, definitely armour is not always... The pockets are always designed to allow the armour to move into the right spot for your body. It doesn't mean that you can't take a sewing thread and a needle and spend 10 minutes per elbow or shoulder and fix that armour in the position where it's going to always be right for you. When they make this gear, it's got to cater for tall and short, thin and robust, and all of the different sizes so that the armour's in the right spot. So you make the pocket bigger so that the armour can be slid to the right spot.
Okay.
If the idea of garments fitting quite snugly is that once you're wearing them and your jacket's done up, that it should sit over your body, so it shouldn't move around, because it should. The whole point of wearing garments that are pretty snug means that it is held against your body by the rest of the garment.
Mm. Actually, Chris, just on that last point. The last point that you made, Chris, you talk. There's a little thing that I've got here. It says the Harley Davidson Fat Boy motorcycle will now be referred to as a generously proportioned, gender-neutral, two-wheeled vehicle.
And on that note, we're going to go and have a few words from. You're listening to Motor Chat. The time is 9:58. So in 9 minutes' time, we will have Gary Cool with The Beat Goes On. He's in the next studio, but unfortunately, he's wearing a Crows cap tonight, so I'm not talking to him. And we've got Chris and Liz Derone, Chris Hurran and Liz Derone on the line as well, talking about Motor Cap. Now, before the break, we were talking about various politically correct stuff as well. But now, Chris, have you found, and I think you might have just touched on it, but have you found there's been an improvement on the gear as your repeat testing, or have you had a chance to repeat test at all?
So armour is definitely getting better. The standards have been in for armour since 2003 in Europe. And the result is that impact protection or armour is getting progressively better and better. It's getting more flexible. It's getting smaller in thickness. It's getting higher energy absorption. We're seeing more and more level 2 armour and higher energy absorptions occurring. So armour's going ahead leaps and bounds. Jackets, pants and gloves haven't really changed a great amount over the 3 years that we've been testing. The only thing that you want to be a little bit careful of is there's a new standard in Europe at the moment that the abrasion testing is a little bit lower in requirements than what the abrasion testing machine that we use. And the result is some of the gear that's been tested under the new standard and developed under the new standard is not as protective as what we would like. And when I say that, examples are is where we've found a typical polycotton hoodie that is getting certified under the new European standard with only a little tiny bit of Kevlar under the elbow and shoulder.
Wow.
Impact protectors, and that's it. So there is a little bit of gear that's going in the wrong direction, but the majority of the stuff is reasonably good.
Yeah. Chris, do you think you'll be ever testing the impact, so the protection points or the armour?
So we do. So all
that's not up on your website.
So the actual armour by itself, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But the armour that's actually in gear is currently tested as part of the gear. We hope eventually to have the ability to put aftermarket armour up there.
That's what I was...
And no MotoCap is looking at that at the moment.
Mm. That's good.
We do remove the armour from the garment to test it. It's tested on a drop anvil so that it's not... It is, you know, removed to test it. We don't test it in garment.
Okay. Actually, do you have a standard or international test regime that you follow in the program that you use?
Yes, yes. Chris, you might go through that.
So all of the tests that we use, apart from the water spray test, are standard tests. We may modify them a little bit to allow us to sample out of garments, because normally the testing is designed where the manufacturer supplies sheets of the material to do the testing. We are using standard tests that are well developed. We haven't invented anything.
Okay.
So we know it is well documented, well tested, and obviously scientifically backed, so that everybody who actually has a look at the website can go with a lot of confidence that the results they've got there are well founded.
Well, it's based on international standards.
Actually, I think it's better.
Every time I hop on a motorbike, I'm wearing clothing that I have sourced based on MotoCap testing standards. So I ride to work most days of the week when I'm going into the office, and I've always geared up, and my gear is 3-star or better on MotoCap.
Yeah. Does the research that you do ever change those standards that you've, the guidelines that you follow?
We've modified some of the testing we do for gloves because the international standard didn't give as much gave very little detail actually on how you tested, and so we did research I was talking about earlier, looking at gloves that had been worn in but we harvested gloves from riders who had had a crash, injured and uninjured, recorded the exact locations of where any damage, like contact damage, had occurred on all of the gloves that we'd harvested. We photographed them in great detail, and then translated that into where the highest impact areas were. And so we've made some modifications to the test protocols as a result of that research.
Right, that sounds...
What I will say is those changes are in process and they will occur in the very near future. Yeah.
And that's just normal growth of research.
Mm. Yep.
Yes, it's all evidence-based and in real-world crashes.
Yep. Now, just...
In population samples, so, you know, everything we do, we don't just test three things, we test hundreds.
Yeah. Now, we've got 2.5 minutes left before Gary comes on with the next show. So, Chris and Liz, how would you summarise the work you're doing and as far as I'm concerned, the importance of what you're doing?
So, for me, giving the rider the right choice so that they can go out and make their own decision on what they wear is very important.
Well, I mean, I agree. I think that the difficulty for riders to make the right choice is choosing between slick advertising, which, you know, may or may not represent the truth of what will happen if you do have a crash. And the thing about MotoCap is that what you wear, we've crashed it first, so you know how it's going to perform, rather than you being the one wearing it when it gets crashed.
Well, personally, I feel that...
riders appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely, because as far as I'm concerned, I'd rather know that you guys had pushed with the gear that I'm wearing to the absolute past the limit, and know damn well that if I'm sliding down the road, at least I can expect a reasonable amount of protection, because like Harold and Kathy, the gear we've bought is all been tested. It's come up quite well, and I'm very comfortable with the level that you've recommended there. So that's great. So again, MotoCap is where.
Yes,
Where can the listener find it?
No.
It's motocap.com.au, and we don't just put the test results up there. There's a lot of information on the site, and there's also videos of the tests we conduct, so that riders can see what we do.
Right.
There's also on the Deakin website that you can see the testing we do.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So, Liz and Chris, again, thank you so much for giving up your time to talk to us, to talk to our listeners. And what we're trying to do is to try and educate those people to go and have a look at the site before you buy. And on that note, we wish all of our listeners a merry, happy Easter, and we pass over to Gary Call.